There you go. That's a demonstration of not using the PC to do what you want to do, especially maybe tightening that little screen connector before you start. Anyway, we'll try and get on. It's not quite the way I wanted to set it up, but I'm sure we can do it as we go along. So I've only got 40 minutes, and I've got loads I want to show you. So I better get going before Remy pulls me off. Today I want to talk to you about being beyond the page, about browsers, about how we interact with browsers, and more importantly, about how browsers interact with other applications on the devices that they're on. Often when I'm watching people using browsers, it's as if they're looking in through a window into another world. They sort of miss the layer that's directly in front of them, the screen that's actually there. In this case, I'm talking about the browser. So today, what I want to do is show you a whole series of demos and then talk you through those demos. And my aim is just to look at building interfaces that sort of re-engage the user with that layer, with that browser surface that's directly in front of them. So I'm going to jump straight out of the presentation now and go through a whole series of demos. And then I'll come back and I'll sort of talk you through each of the demos that I'm going to show you. Okay, so the first screen you can see here is one of a couple of side projects I'm going to use to show you these demos. This one is basically a Firefox plugin that I use. It tracks all of my history. So on this other tab here, I can show you the history of my browsing. As I browse through the web, it sort of looks at all of the pages and tracks them all. But more importantly, it actually extracts information out of there. It looks at the pages as I load them and use those pages and extracts information out. So one of the types of information it extracts out is contacts. So I've got a great big database of all of the contacts that I've found while browsing. And then the same API, plugin, I've produced an API, which I can then query myself. So your page you're actually looking at is just a query going into that API. All I'm going to use this for today is just as a source of contacts. So I'm just going to minimize this a little bit to the side. So I've just pushed that over there. And it's got a number of contacts that I've been browsing over the last few days. The other project I want to look at is a project called PeopleSource, so PeopleStore. This is a HTML5 application, a client-side application. It's just a single page. It can actually work in two ways. I sort of took TiddlyWiki, which is a great little app, and it's got this thing where it can be used on a file protocol. So this application can be used on a file protocol. So if I pull it up as a file, it'll actually save to itself, edit its own content, and use that as a data store. Today I'm going to use it in a slightly different way. If you use it on HTTP protocol, it actually uses local storage. But everything you're going to see from this point onwards is all done locally. So I just wanted to point you that out. So the first thing I want to look at is drag and drop. So on this side, we've got the contacts that have been found as I've been browsing around the web. And I can just move those across. So the last few pages I were looking at was the pages on the Clear Left website. So I can drag across from one to the other and drop contacts from one application across into the other application, like so. It's worth noting there's a couple of things on here we'll just talk about. I'll just find a couple more to drag across. Drag carries across. As it drops in, you'll notice that it finds the social media profiles for that individual. About 2 years ago, I built a library called Ident Engine, and it uses Google's Social Graph API. If it has a URL, if you can give it a URL, it will then go out to the Social Graph API, find all of their other profiles, and that's what I'm using here. As I drag the contacts in, it actually fired that off because it found in the contacts a URL, so it did that discovery mechanism for me. The last thing to note is that it's obviously got it does automatic storage as well. So if I just pull another one across, pulled Harry's, Andy's there. You'll notice within a few seconds in the top corner, a little thing will come up to tell me that it's just saved those. So they're all now saved into there. So that's dragging and dropping across from one to another. You can do more complicated things with drag and drop as well. So Clear Left, as well as having a page that's got each of their individuals on, it's got a contact page, and on there they've got their whole office address. So if I just scroll up a little bit further, I know I've got that somewhere, and I can drag that office address, and I can drop it rather into the center area, I can drop it over the all. And what actually happens there is it then merges all of those together. So you can see that I've drag and drop information from one side to another and then dropped it in there, and it merges the contacts together for me. So you can do quite complicated things with drag and drop in terms of interfaces. Okay, so I'm going to just close this one window down here and pull up a window which hopefully has some files in it. So you can also drag and drop files from the desktop. So the window I've just pulled up is Windows Explorer, and I'm going to drag and drop now files across over into the People Store. So the first one I want to do is a vCard. vCard is the format that you usually get with all types of email client, like Outlook and other types of email clients. And I can drag that file directly across into here. In this case, it's got my contact information in. You can see that's now appeared here and dropped in there. So that's just a single vCard file. I could pull across a vCard that had loads of different contacts in it. The other one I wanted to show you is just below it. A little while ago, I went to an event called IndieCamp, and it had a web page on it for the attendees. And each of those was marked up with a H-card, the Microformat H-card. So I can actually, I saved that page down, and this is what I'm just going to drag over. So this is the page that the attendees page. And what's happened here is it's importing the HTML, and within a second, it's just processing it all at the moment. It's now imported all of the attendees from that into my application, so we can see this quick scroll up and down here. This is all being done client-side, remember, the parsing of the HTML, the extracting of the data from within it, and then putting it into the application. But we can go even further than that. We can start to look at more complex file types. So over here, I have a zip file. And within this zip file, again, is my contact information stored with inside it. So I can actually drag that into here and drop that down. And I've got a client-side JavaScript library, which will then actually extract that. And if I just type in quickly at the top, I can show you. There you can see it's just brought in this very long one here. And that was actually brought in from the zip library. I can't say that's my work. There's some really brainy guy in Japan who I pinched that library off. But it's fascinating to me that you can now drag binary files into JavaScript and actually interrogate them and pull information out of them. So that's important, dragging, dropping, dragging files in. The other thing I wanted to just show you is that you can actually also export outwards. So if I double-click on my contact and go export vCard, this is just now offering up to save that vCard. What's happened here is that the vCard is being created virtually. I've done that in JavaScript. And then I found the methodology of then telling the browser, rather than to try and display it, to actually allow the user to save it. So if I press this now, I'll be able to save it to my desktop. We can do some more stuff in terms of dragging and dropping between different applications. So at the moment, you just saw me drag between Firefox and Firefox. So if I pull up Chrome, let me just get a version of Chrome. So I've got the same application running in Chrome. Again, I just want to pull a few across. So I'll just do a quick search for the Clear Left people. Okay, so there's just the Clear Left contacts now. I can click over here and drag, and there you go, between Firefox and Chrome. It's completely different applications pulling data backwards and forwards. Okay, so we'll just close down the Firefox for a second so I can show you a couple more things. Okay, so what we might want to do is also is to drag out a file from the application. So I can do that as well. So if I wanted to actually create a vCard of the people that are on here, I can now, if I just click and drag over to the top of desktop, and there you go, it's dragged out a vCard, and that's just the people that are on there that I've dragged out, creating that information on the fly and the file on the fly. There's just one little last demo I want to do before I move back to the slides, which is to look at copy and paste a little bit. So if I could just find it. There we go. I'm at the stage with this application of trying to work out how to do an entry screen. And one of the ways that I often try and move information about when I'm on the web is to copy and paste it between things. So if I find your contact information, I'm always swiping and copying it. So that's what I've been looking at here. So this uses the same sort of discovery mechanism I showed you earlier. So if I just show you that I can type into here my email address. This is my work email address. Magix.com. And then press discover. It's using a series of APIs now to do the discovery. One API matches the email address to a social profile like Twitter or something. Then I use the social graph to find all the other ones, all the other profiles. And once I've done that, I then decide which ones of those have got H cards on them, like Twitter and Google profiles. And then I can actually also then pull in information. So here you can see, not, as well as finding profiles, it's actually pulled in information about me, like the company I work for, my job title, a bit of location information. So I've got all of these APIs working together in the background. But if I want to do the copy and paste thing, if I just clear this, there's some interesting properties in copy and paste. So I'm just going to pull up, hopefully, my contact information. Okay, so this is my blog. And this is the contact information on my blog on the About page. So if I just do a control copy on that. We'll just get rid of that. Go back to where we were. Add person. Paste it into this box. And there you go again. And this time it's actually found some more information. What I actually copied was a piece of HTML. That HTML had some microformats in it, but I only copied a fraction of it. But it still managed to look at that, find that information, and you can see it's got a much more extended address piece here, and that's because it's managed to parse it out of the HTML. But it's also managed to do the discovery as well, because it found the email address. I'll talk to you in a minute about how all of that worked. So we'll move back to the slides, and I'll try and explain to you each of the different demos that we've just looked at. So I suppose the first thing for me to say is that when you're doing this, you really need to sort of think about your pages in terms of data and objects. So if you're going to be moving data from one place to another or extracting data from web pages, it's really important that that sort of data is encapsulated in some way. So you can see here I'm obviously using these sort of lozenge shapes to encapsulate the contacts and stuff. And the way that I'm doing that is a microformat called HCard, which is adding the extra metadata to the HTML that allows me to store all of that. I could, of course, use the microdata format, which is with HTML5 or RDFA if I wanted to. They all do very similar things. But the one thing I'd also like to add is that you really don't need to go that far sometimes. So if I'd wanted to build something that was about dragging and dropping and copying audio, for example, maybe music files or something like that, we've probably already got enough semantics in HTML5 with the audio tags and stuff to do that. So it's not just about the extensions of microformats. There's already lots of data and lots of ways you can extract data from pages as long as you're using semantic markup is, I suppose, what I'm trying to say. Before I move on, being a bit of a northern lad, I tend to want to qualify everything I say. So if I'm talking about stuff, I'm going, yeah, it works this one, and no, it doesn't work on that. So what I've done is I've put at the top of the slides what the browsers I think it actually works with at the moment. So as we go along, you can see what's going on. Maybe I won't have to qualify everything so often. Where it's important, we'll talk about it. So the drag and drop API. This was born of IE. The first version of this was actually from IE. It was really early on as well. It was sort of the same sort of time as Ajax. And it's been about for a long time, just not very well used. Obviously, as it's been brought into the HTML5, we're now seeing a lot of the other browsers taking part and implementing it. you really want to read the article from PPK here. It's a really funny read. It basically talks about what a mess the specification is, and I've got to completely agree with him. It really is a mess. And also in Remy's book, he talks about how it doesn't match up at all to the quality of what you get in terms of drag and drop if you're building native applications on desktops and etc. That said, hopefully I've just demonstrated to you that it's very practical and is usable at the moment. Those demonstrations showed you that it actually can work. If we're talking about HTML5 drag and drop, the difference between that and something like jQuery UI, where you've got this draggability in there, is that you can cross over application boundaries. So that's when you know you're looking at sort of proper HTML5 drag and drop. It's pretty easy to actually build. If you want to make something draggable, draggable equals true on the element, pretty much does it for you. There's some little bits you have to do with early versions of Safari, but I won't go into that. So here we can just drag this element. To actually move the data about and use the data, there's two major events that you need to know about. There's quite a few more, but these are the two that you really need to know about. So on the element, you're going to drag the bit that's moving. When it starts dragging, you get this onDrag event, and you set the data. So the on the event, data transfer, set data. The text bit there is the type of data that you want to move. And obviously, in this case, the second part is the payload, which is my name. And then on the area, the drop zone, where you're going to drag something into it, you add this event, the on drop event. And again, you call the same thing, except this time you're calling the get data method. And you just give it the type of data that you want to retrieve. So I want to retrieve the text, and that would set the name variable to Glenn. Pretty simple. Two really simple events. There are more, but those are the ones you need. A while back, I did this site. It was an experiment about a year ago. I think I actually showed it at Async at last year's Full Frontal. It was one of my early attempts at doing drag and drop, and the reason why it uses an icon to drag is because I wanted to do something that included the earlier versions of IE. So one of the differences between the new HTML5 version and the early version is with the early one, you could only drag images or links. So that's the reason why I used an icon. Obviously now I've sort of moved away from that, and the demo I was just showing you was using divs, and I was dragging divs containing the contact. So that's one of the differences between the early versions and the HTML5 version. The other difference is this. With the new HTML5 version, you can set lots of different types. Pretty much with the early IE ones, it was just the text stuff. But here you can see the two types that I'm commonly using today. So the first one at the top is a JSON. I'm using a JSON MIME type. And you can see that the payload is obviously structured as JSON. In this case, I've actually encapsulated it as a string. But there you can see it's a vCard, and that's the beginning of what a vCard string would look like. Okay, so we'll move on to dragging files from the desktop. This guy here, Ryan's written loads of really good articles. If you're interested in this, highly recommend you go and have a look at his site. There's some good stuff on there. It works really simply. On that event I was telling you about earlier, the e.data transfer, there's a separate collection called files. So if you drag a file or multiple files over onto a drop zone, you'll get this files collection populated. So all you've got to do is iterate through it. Then you use the new file reader API, and this is pretty simple. In this case, I know it's a text file that I'm going to be reading, and you just read it out. So that's relatively easy for reading in files, especially if they're text format. Dragging files to the desktop, this is really only for Chrome at the moment. The way to do this is this special property here, download URL. So this is in replacement of the normal type you would use. So where you usually put a MIME type in there, you put download URL instead. The payload looks complicated, but it isn't really. It comes in three parts. The first part is the MIME type. So in this case, it would be image/png. I'm dealing with a PNG file. Then the file name, logo.png. That's the file name I want it to be. And then, in this case, the URL of where to get that resource from. So if I was dragging this, it would actually download the image from the web, from this URL, and then drag it and drop it onto my desktop and name it logo PNG. For the stuff that I was just showing you, I went one step further and I joined the downloadable URL with a data URL. So this is exactly the same as when you're sometimes creating a CSS file and you want to inline the image and you use the Base64 encoding to inline the image. You can do the same and add these two techniques together. So here you can see that I've Base64 encoded an image and then I create that sort of three-part data package to set and use set data again. And that's it, it's pretty simple. Allows you to dynamically and virtually create files within your application client side and have them drag and drop download. So, copy and paste, one hell of a mess. This is really disappointing. When I've been doing all these experiments through this year, I've sort of created pages like this one on my blog. I've got a little area called CodeBits where I go and try and test out all of the different methods and properties and just to see where all the browsers are. And there is support for this clipboard data object, which should allow us to do copy and paste, but it's so patchy that not one of them is really practically usable. Yet they've all got something going running in some way. You can sort of see some of the stuff's working. In some cases it is, but I just couldn't find a way to make it practically work. Hopefully this is going to change. I did this test about 6 months ago, so things might have moved on a little bit since then. So the bit I was showing you about copy and paste is the one area where I found it useful, which is to use a content editable area, which is quite interesting considering the talk we heard a little bit earlier. Because with content editable, the browser people have already, to some degree, implemented copy and paste. And if you lift the hood up, you can actually sometimes even see the data being transported about with the MIME types, packaged in the way that you want to do it, except the API doesn't provide it for you. But strangely, it all works in terms of their internals and it working with the content editable. But it does provide a space where I can paste HTML in, and then I can add things like on DOM insert, on paste, on copy, and then interrogate that HTML and extract semantic information out of it. Because really what I want to be able to do is to copy semantic objects from one page to another, and that's not really possible at the moment, and this is as near as I've managed to get. So downloading virtual files, the good, the bad, and the ugly. There really isn't any good, but I'll tell you about the bad and the ugly. This was the bit where I showed you where I clicked on one of the contacts and asked for it to be exported, and it created a virtual file for me, and we got the browser to act as if it was going to download it rather than for it to try and view it. So this is the way it works. This is one of the ways we can go. This is using the blob builder and the URL object. So basically you create a blob builder and you create one of the Windows URL objects. The main bit to look at there is the bit line which says builder.append and it's got vcard. That would be my payload. That would actually have the vcard in it. And there you can see that I'm hijacking a link. I'm looking for a link called virtual file link. The second most important bit is setting this special attribute on the link, which is .download, which tells the browser what the file name's got to be. And then basically at the bottom there, you just use the create object URL to construct it. This is a hack that I found. I can't even remember how I found this. You can tell it's a hack by my little pirate sign at the top. I'm not recommending you would use it, but I was experimenting loads with all the different ways that you could manipulate the link object within JavaScript. And it's got an attribute that we hardly ever use. It's called the type attribute, and you can see it there. And it actually, in the specification, in W3 specification, it says it's a way for you to suggest to the browser the type of payload that's it should expect. So using that in conjunction with creating a global variable. So you can see at the top, I create a name, a variable called name. I give it what the file name's going to be without the extension. Then I put that into Windows dot and give it a Windows property, which you can see there. And I make that equal to the payload. And then at the bottom here, I just create a JavaScript protocol on the link. and that actually works. So the demo I showed you was actually using this. As I said, I'm not sure you should use it, but it's an interesting hack. Okay, so the stuff I've talked to you up until now has been all about types of interaction, the types of interaction you would really expect from a desktop application. I want to move on a little bit and look at something new, which is web intents. This is something that's sort of up and coming at the moment, so I'll try and explain the idea to you for the people who haven't sort of come across it yet. So I have an Android phone. I'm one of the few people in this hall, I should imagine. If I click in the album area where all the photos are, I can get a link to share. And when I click share, it comes up with this menu here. What happens is, as I load applications onto the Android phone, they register their ability to do certain tasks. These are called intents. This idea has been sort of encapsulated and moved towards the web. And when you register an intent, in very simplistic terms this is how it works. You have a verb and an object. So the verb is like an action, and the object is, as it sounds, some sort of social media object or asset. So you can see, like, I could post a status or edit an image, and I can make combinations like this about things that I want to do with objects. And that's what you actually register. So those applications that you just saw in this list here have all registered their ability to share an image. So the idea is that we take this a little bit further into the web, and these are some mock-ups. I'm going to show you some demos in a second, just to go through the idea. The interface in the browsers hasn't been designed yet, but I'd really like to see it like a little bit like this, that rather than, you know, when you go onto a lot of websites, you get things like the Facebook like button and maybe a delicious bookmarking button, and they're all proprietary. And the funny thing is that most of the times I go on there, they're not the services that I use. And the services that I do use are not on there. So I end up with what would appear like a lot of choice, but actually none at all, because it's not the choices that I want. With this idea, you end up with a generic link or a generic button that says something like bookmark. And then the services that have already registered with my browser are then popped up as options. So in here, if I wanted to bookmark it, it would then come up with the options that allows me to bookmark. And I could choose then between the ones that I want to use. So in this case, I could press delicious, and then it would operate very much like you'd expect it to operate. It would pop up the delicious little window that allows me to bookmark and pass on the information to that so they had the bits of information to do that operation. So I'm going to stop and do a little bit more demos for you and actually show you some early stuff that I've been working on. Paul Kinlan, who's actually here, whose idea this is, has built a JavaScript shim so that we can try out the interactions and see what the flows are like. So that's what I'm going to use. So I'm just going to close this down and pull up Chrome. So the first one I want to show you is saving a profile or a contact. So you've seen my People Store application, and if I came across some sort of contact page, and let's say I was being a really nice boss this year and Fatboy Slim was someone I wanted for our Christmas party, so I want to save his information onto my contacts, I can actually just click on this button here, and it pops up a little window. It is a bare bones sort of interface at the moment, so it may look as nice as you would imagine, but it shows you the flow. So now you can see that I can pick. So I can now pick between a couple of applications. So I'm going to save the contact. Ooh. There we go. I saved it to the wrong one. The one I was doing was on the web. Let's go. Please save local. There it is, Fatboy Slim. So it's saved across. It's a little bit difficult to see it pop in without actually doing. So what actually happened there was that the shim actually mediated between the two sites. And once I said saved and picked the endpoint, it passed that information across. And you can see it's injected there, Fatboy Slim's information. The other one I want to show you is I've created this little page here which has got a number of profiles on it. So these are the types of information that I would usually use for filling in different types of forms. So I've got like a social version, maybe that would be for something like Twitter, a work version for maybe doing contact for deliveries, so if I wanted something sent to work, and one for my home address as well. So if I go back to some of the demos, in this case, I've got the equivalent of like a little contacts form, something like you'd expect for a delivery. So if I click on the pick profile, hopefully you can see local pick profile. That's now added. You can see as it's kicked in this time, it's added the buttons because it understands that I'm using it as this application for selection. So I'll pick the work address and do the select. And there you go. It's filled in the address. Pull the data backwards and forwards. So the first demo I showed you pushing a contact from one site to another. The second demo is referred to as a pick. It basically asked the other application to provide a contact, which was then passed back again and used to fill in the profile. And I'll just show you one more of those because there's a sort of slightly next step up from it. So here, I can do pick profile. In this case, this page was for a social media site. If I do it again, and I'll pick the social version this time. The interesting thing here, you can see as part of the JSON, I've passed across the image as well. I did that using Base64 encoding, so it's pulled in the image. And if I want to pick some friends, rather than use the work home social one, I'll actually try and use the people store. You can see people store's now got this blue button on it. So if I just narrow that down a little bit, because I don't want to pick all of them. So I've now narrowed it down, select, and you can see that it's actually pulled in at the bottom there, the friends. I've only displayed the names, but it did actually pull the whole data set over. So it allowed me then to ask for a collection of friends and pull that across. And hopefully you can see that'd be quite powerful. I mean, it's literally just two or three clicks and I can populate a whole registration form. And if I wanted to move a whole selection of friends into a new system. Yeah, we'll just go back to the slides again. So I'll just quickly explain how that works. When you want to register a service, you do it really quickly using this tag, which is an intents tag. It just defines the action type and where the end service is. It's done as a tag, so that would allow search engines to find the different services. For the sending data, it's really simple. You just create an intent. So when you click on that button, you wrap the on-the-click event and stick this inside it, create your intent, say what the type of action you want, so save, the MIME type, and pass in the payload that would then send out the contact to the other application. And you do that by firing start activity and loading the intent. The reverse of that, where I showed you about actually picking a contact, it's really simple as well. So when they click the pick button there, inside the click event for that, you create an event. You create the intent again. Do the save this time. The MIME type. You don't need to pass any data because we're just asking for data. The bit you do is to add an extra argument for the returning callback function. So this will be called by the browser once the user's picked something and the browser sent back the data, and the data will be stored in data.intent. It works really well on mobile devices. I've put one example of this up on my blog. If you go onto Android and iPhone, you'll find that within three literal clicks, you can fill out this form using this demo. So not now, but afterwards, give it a go. It's quite amazing how fluid the user journey is. So to quickly go back over the things that I've taught to you today, going back to what Phil said earlier, I better put them all into real-world context. Drag and drop. If you want to drag and drop between browsers, pretty much there. IE10 will be also adding that support soon. So you've got support across all the browsers except for Opera. This is the ones in terms of the latest browsers. So as long as you do it as progressive enhancement, it would work well. dragging files into browsers. Yes, you can do that as well. We've got good support in Firefox and Chrome. Again, progressive enhancement. Copy and paste, forget about it. Really, the browsers need to sort that out. It's mad that we have drag and drop, but not copy and paste. Obviously, the web intent stuff is brand new and is up and coming. With that, I'd say, if you like the idea, talk to the people who are evangelists for the different browsers, try and get them to move it forward. It is moving forward at a pace. And I'd just quickly like to leave you with a thought about why I'm interested in all of this. This is Lotus Notes 123. I'm now going to tell you how old I am. When I was going through art college and university, the desktop revolution was just at its end. And I went into places where this was like the major killer application of the time. Why that interests me, because a bit later in the late 90s, I was doing informational architecture work in very large corporates, and they were bringing in this idea called a client server, where they expected everybody to have tiny boxes with no input devices, no floppy disks, no way of getting stuff in, and all the apps would be run remotely. Sound familiar? And the problem was not the idea of that idea itself, but they forgot something. The reason why this was a killer application was because the accountants that first used it were able to collect their own data. Before that, they either had to use mainframes or they were using paper and it took too long. So they could be able to create their own data and they could make their own way up of analyzing that data. And in that way, they had creative independence. They also had data ownership and data portability. And some of the reasons why I think the client-server enterprise drive failed a little bit was because people forgot about these three really important things. And I think as we move forward and we start to talk about things like the cloud, it's really important that we keep hold of some of the things that actually work in terms of rich clients, as well as all of the benefits that we get from the cloud, like syncing things and moving things backwards and forwards. So for me, things like Dropbox and GitHub are really good examples of where you can mix both rich clients with creative independence and data ownership and the benefits of the cloud. And that's the way I think we should all move forward. And I'd like to leave you with that thought. Thank you.